Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, October the 9th. Are you addicted to driving? Well, our guest says most of us are, and he says that the dangers are many when it comes to what he calls autobesity. We will talk with Steve Hinneker this hour, Executive Director of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin, who wrote an op-ed that appeared in Sunday's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the dangers of autobesity. He says that our addiction to driving is costing us lives, dollars, and destroyed communities every day, and it's time to start investing in alternatives that don't require a driver's license. We will wonder if you agree with him or not. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Steve Hinneker, Executive Director of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin and the author of the op-ed piece, The Dangers of Autobesity, joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, you say in the piece, the signs of autobesity are everywhere, and that if miles were calories, we would be in intensive care. What are the signs?
Well, you know, the signs are the ever-increasing number of vehicle miles traveled in the state every year. We drive, on average, each one of us, twice as much as our forebears 25 years ago did. And, you know, part of the problem here is that it's kind of like a kid in a cafeteria in a high school where there's not a lot of choices on healthy food. We don't have a lot of choices right now as far as getting around. We need cars. We rely on cars. Our communities are built in ways that make it impossible to get along without a car.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the problem. But if you look at the number of miles we drive, on average, for every car that is owned, that car is driven 12,000 miles a year. And we need to start looking at ways of reducing our reliance on the car and expanding our choices so that we don't have to hop in the car every time we go out the door.
Yeah. Maybe not in rural areas, but most urban areas of Wisconsin, we do have the choice of hopping on a bus, don't we?
Well, not as much as you would think. Transit lines have been cut dramatically over the past couple of decades. And that's because of the formula that we have for investing in transportation infrastructure. So if you look at the transportation budget, we have this formula that says the more miles that are put on the road, the more money we put into expanding roads. And the problem is that it becomes a perpetual motion machine. Every time we get into a car, it reaffirms the need to build more roads, and that comes at the expense of transit. And consequently, in this perpetual motion machine, we keep on building new developments in ways that don't accommodate transit, but only accommodate cars. And we've gotten into a vicious cycle.
What are these? Do you have any examples of developments that are auto-dependent?
Well, sure. Most of our new developments are in southern Wisconsin. The typical new housing construction has a house on 1.5 acres, and that compares to a national average of about 4 houses per acre. When you have a house that's on 1.5 acres, the neighborhood tends to be very spread out, and it becomes difficult to serve that area with transit because the transit spot typically will be too far away from a house for someone not to get into their car and travel. And once you're in your car, you're going to typically drive by that transit stop and go all the way to work. Now, if you look at our older neighborhoods or some of the, quote, traditional neighborhood design neighborhoods such as Viridian's Grandview Commons over on the east side, we have houses that are closer together, narrower streets, and what happens is these areas are typically better served by transit because they lend themselves to transit. It's easier for transit to be successful when houses are closer together.
Mm-hmm. We are talking with Steve Hinneker, who says we are a society addicted to driving, and it's costing us dearly, and it's time to go on a diet to combat auto-obesity. Would it work? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm wondering if you admit to being addicted to driving, or whether you agree with our guests that we don't set up our communities in a way that encourages people to walk more or bike more or use mass transit more. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, 17 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, October the 9th. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6. Ben will be talking with guests about current issues of the day. And after 3 on Here on Earth, Jean Faraca and her guest will tell the true story of an Ethiopian woman who rescued hundreds of AIDS orphans and cared for them in her own home. That's coming up after 3. Right now, we're talking with Steve Hinneker. He is executive director of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin. He wrote an op-ed that appeared in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on Sunday, The Dangers of Auto-Obesity. In it, he points out that last year, Wisconsinites racked up an unbelievable 60 billion miles behind the wheel. Each one of us drove, on average, twice as many miles as drivers 25 years ago. We spend, on average, $7,000 a year per car on our addiction, plus parking costs. In Wisconsin, there's a motor vehicle crash once every 5 minutes, an injury every 14 minutes, and a fatality every 11 hours. Motor vehicles are the principal cause of ozone air pollution and contribute to about one-third of our global warming gas emissions. Highways have destroyed vibrant neighborhoods throughout the state. More neighborhoods are at risk because of expansion plans. Farmland, wetlands, cultural resources are all too frequent victims of road expansions. How do we combat auto-obesity? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Dan in Duluth is with us first. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello. Thank you for the discussion about auto-obesity. 25 years ago, I got rid of my car entirely. And the wonderful thing that happened is I ended up having to work 2 days less a week, and I'm able to use that time volunteering my time in the community, either working in parks or helping out in the community with hunger projects. And I guess it's I'm not going as many places as I didn't need to go. So I guess economically I'm not the biggest impact in the world, but my health has improved and my community's health improved. I have no question, and I'll hang up and listen to your comments.
But first, Dan, okay. Does you find it easy enough to get around?
I certainly do. Mm-hmm. I do happen to live in an urban area that is serviced by mass transit. However, I rarely use mass transit, finding that the time commuting, walking, or bike riding is a positive gain, and I'm much less hurried in my day-to-day existence.
Mm-hmm. Steve Hinneker?
That's a great story. You know, the thing that Dan points out is the health benefits here, because if across the United States we have an epidemic also of obesity, and auto-obesity is kind of a play on words, obviously. And the lack of pedestrian activities is a major component of that. And we end up, unfortunately, using the car for trips that are easy to walk. I've gone to my neighborhood grocery store, which is only about two blocks from my house, and I see folks that are right next door neighbors driving to that same spot. And I think part of it is just recognizing that, hey, it's okay to walk to the store, and that will help us make a small difference. You know, a lot of people, especially depending on where they live, really don't have much choice for most of their transportation needs. But there are lots of ways that, in very small ways, we can begin to make a difference.
Yeah. Well, certainly I can walk I think it's about a mile and a half to the nearest store where I live, or about a mile. And I can certainly walk that, but it's not so fun walking back with a week's worth of groceries.
Sure. Well, part of that is just consolidating trips, too. Think about, as soon as you get home, you tend to think, oh, I forgot a loaf of bread, or I was supposed to stop off at the cleaners or something like that. And a little bit more organization sometimes can add up to a difference in the number of miles driven as well.
Yeah. You point out, though, too, that in new developments in some communities, there aren't any sidewalks to walk on.
Well, this is a real problem. And what happens in those communities where you don't have sidewalks, typically the roads are even wider. And a wider road and a straighter road makes cars go faster. We tend to drive according to the design speed of the roads. So if you have wider streets, straighter streets, cars go faster, and no sidewalks, you put pedestrians on those streets, and it becomes a hazardous mix. So we're not designing communities, we're not designing communities in ways that encourage walking.
Thanks to Dan in Duluth. Now we go to Dan in Nisida. Hi, Dan.
I've bicycled quite a bit. I even bicycled to a job for 4 years, but there was one stretch of road that was kind of dangerous because they just didn't have the design capacity. But they did have buses further in towards Chicago. Excuse me. Out here in Nisida, it's okay for bicycling into town. But in the wintertime, they don't shovel the area there's an area on a bridge that it's dangerous in the winter. You can't really bicycle at all. Otherwise, I could all winter. Yeah. I try to bicycle every week or if I go down to the library or even just going down to Quick Trip or something like that. You almost have to have a car out here, though, to live out here.
Well, you're showing that you don't have need it entirely for every trip, though. But Dan is few and far between, right, Steve Hinecker?
Well, sure. In many areas of the state, in fact, most areas of the state, you have to have a car. It's just the way we have evolved. But the problem is, and Dan points this out, is that we trivialize the alternatives, such as bicycling and walking. It's too easy to say, a bicyclist, you've got to be in your 20s and really fit, and it's just recreational activity. But if you look around the world, you have communities, including northern communities, where there's a lot of snow, Amsterdam, and places like that, where they've taken the time to develop a way for bicycles and pedestrians to get around year-round, and people respect that. And we've lost, I think, that respect for pedestrians and bicyclists because sometimes when we're driving, those people just become obstacles.
Yeah. So what kind of diet do you want to put us on?
Well, the kind of diet I think we need to do is first stop the junk food. And by that I mean something that kind of prompted this article was the Pabst Farm Mall proposal out in Oconomowoc, where the state all of a sudden came up with over $20 million to build a new interchange for a new mall. And it struck me that this is exactly the wrong direction because the new mall that was being proposed was entirely auto-dependent. There's no transit services. It would be difficult to walk or bicycle there. It was completely designed for the car. Meanwhile, less than 2 miles away from the proposed mall is a train station that is idle in downtown Oconomowoc. It's a very nice train station. It's an old one. It's been kept up in good shape. And there's a lot of area in the downtown for new retail, reinvestment in existing properties. And it just struck me as, why are we going out and investing in a new interchange to get more cars to a new mall that is only going to increase the problem of driving when there's such a great alternative very nearby that in the long run would be a lot cheaper than maintaining the millions of dollars of road network and putting up with the consequences of the health consequences of less walking and the climate impacts of global warming gases from the car and the air pollution that comes from cars and the runoff and all of that. There's an alternative there, and the state has decided to completely ignore the transit needs and only think of the pavement.
Mm. What about the argument, though, Steve Hinneker, that you can have mass transit, you can have trains, but having them doesn't mean people will use them to the point that they should be used?
Actually, the experience is whenever you put in a train or a fixed rail investment, invariably the demand overwhelms the available service and you get expansion. All across the United States, municipalities, cities are investing in rail. The Hiawatha service between Chicago and Milwaukee is very, very popular. All across the country, there's a movement towards these fixed rail transit features, and they're working very well. And we have to get beyond this idea that no one will use them, because they do, and they can spur the kind of development that is more valuable to a community. If you think about the kind of development that goes up along the side of an interstate, it tends to be a big box, and it's not a very attractive kind of development. But if you look at the kind of investment that comes next to a transit stop, a rail station, you get the traditional downtown feel where it's walking around to stores, small galleries, and things like that. It's a much more human and desirable experience.
Yeah. So are you placing most of the blame for this auto obesity problem on policymakers or on all of us who hop in the car and drive to the grocery store when it's two blocks away?
No, I think policymakers are just reflecting the will of the public. And the problem is that we've looked to these large lot development as kind of the ultimate part of the American dream. And when we get there, too often we realize there's isolation in a lot of these areas. The dependency on the car becomes a little bit depressing. And we just need to begin to explore what it's like to have more traditional development. The areas that have traditional development are just booming. Houses that are built on narrow streets with alleys and coffee shops nearby are very, very popular. And I think we just have to acknowledge that this is part of a trend, and we should take a closer look at that.
Our guest is Steve Hinneker. He is Executive Director of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin. We're talking with him about a recent op-ed he wrote. It appeared Sunday in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the dangers of auto-obesity. He says that our addiction to driving is costing us dearly, and it's time we go on a diet to combat auto-obesity. Maybe lose a couple of tons and stop driving that car so much. And maybe invest in healthy alternatives like for more biking and walking and developments that are not dependent on automobiles. What do you think? Do you admit to being addicted to your vehicle? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Tuesday, October the 9th. We are talking with Steve Hinneker, Executive Director of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin, who wrote a recent op-ed that was in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the dangers of auto-obesity, our addiction with driving, our fixation with driving. He says that it's costing us dearly in terms of money, in terms of lives, in terms of destroyed communities. And he says it's time to invest in alternatives that aren't auto-dependent or don't require a driver's license. And we wonder if you have any questions or thoughts about this at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Are we a society addicted to driving, and are we in denial about it? Wondering about your driving habits. Do you admit to driving practically everywhere you go? Or do you try to make a point of sometimes walking to the store or biking to work or trying to find mass transit to use instead of your automobile? We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest. Donna in Menominee is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thousand Friends of Wisconsin does great work, and I am in heated agree with them on this subject. But I think that it is tantamount to an addiction for many people, and I think it's one that most people don't want to get over. The reason that houses on narrow streets with public transit nearby are selling well is because there aren't enough of them to meet the demand, but the demand is, I believe, nowhere near a majority of the American population. Most of the people I know and the people in my neighborhood want big houses with no sidewalks. They don't want to pay for snow removal or do it themselves, and they want to drive their cars everywhere, and they have no interest in the kinds of developments he's talking about. And I think that's probably 70 to 80% of the population. Now, 20% wouldn't be bad, but I think we need to be realistic about how entrenched this is.
Mm-hmm. Steve Hinneker?
Well, that's a good point. You know, what's going on actually is the change in demographics is pushing a demand for smaller lot sizes and different kind of housing. The housing that gave rise to our problem, this 1.5 acre lot size, came about with the great expansion after World War II into the suburbs and the development of the highways. And at that time, the majority of the American families were mom, dad, and 2.2 kids. Actually, today, that nuclear family is down to about 25% of the total population and shrinking. So what we're seeing is a tremendous rise in alternative families. We've got a lot of households that are single-person residences. We've got a lot that are just two people. And as we see the reduction in the family size in a house, we're seeing a lot more demand for things like condominiums and smaller units, apartments, and the traditional design. So I think that the demand is actually growing for the smaller lots. And when I talk to the builders across the state, most of them recognize this and are concerned that they're only getting permits to build the large lots when they would rather be building for what the future population is. So the demand is still very, very substantial for the large lot, but it's actually decreasing. And I think that, you know, in order to meet the future demands, we ought to be looking at a different housing stock.
Anything else, Donna?
I hope he's right. I should say that I myself, within the month, will be moving to, this is my own personal radical solution, an eco-village in northern Missouri in which people do not own personal powered vehicles.
Really?
Yeah, and they drive very little. So I'm looking forward to that, but I don't expect most people to want to do that.
So the vehicles are banned in this community?
Personally owned powered vehicles are not allowed in the community. There is a biodiesel fleet of two. For 26 adults and about 8 or 10 children, and you can rent the car, and people share rides into town, and people ride bicycles a lot.
Wow.
Well, people telecommute, but...
Steve Hinneker, do you see that happening more?
Well, that's a great segue to an important topic about how do you reduce the number of miles you're driving. And one of the largest determinants of how many miles you're going to drive in a household is whether or not you have a second car. I mean, most of us, over 99% of us, I think, need to have a car. But it's that second car that really begins to drive the miles up. And so if you're able to have, such as in a community like this, shared cars. In Madison, we have a community car, which is a shared car that's available when you need it. In fact, if you do the math, you can save a substantial amount of money, $7,000 a year on a car. If you can avoid buying that second car, occasionally rent a car, take a cab, take the bus, walk or bike, you can save a lot of money and have a big impact on the number of miles you drive. In my own family, we we've decided to have only a single car and use rental cars or other, you know, friends' cars for those rare occasions when we have to have a second car. And it's actually turned out to be that I think we've used a cab once or twice and rented a car two or three times over the course of a year, pocketing about, you know, $6,500 in the process. So you can save money, you can have a healthier lifestyle, and be better off if you can work it out so you can only have one car.
Thanks, Donna, very much for the call, and happy travels. So hope you'll continue listening on the Internet. Esam in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing, Joy?
Very good.
Good morning. I thank you for bringing up this topic, by the way. I really appreciate it because I think it's a very important thing, just but people, yes, are not very aware of it, and they're not very... They don't recognize the importance of this topic, and so I appreciate you bringing this up. My opinion and my point of view, basically, I agree with most of the callers about the design of the communities. I think the design of the communities contribute to the fact that people are dependent on cars so much. This is my sixth year in the U.S., and I lived in different communities, and only very few within the whole U.S. are, like, designed that you can have public transportation reach them to a point that you cannot be dependent on cars. But that those communities are very, very limited in numbers. The rest of the communities are designed in a way that there is no public transportation that can reach them on time and can be convenient to people to depend on public transportation instead of their individual cars. So that's one point. The other point is that... a lack of public transportation, because there is public transportation, but is it enough for everyone to be dependent on it and get independent from cars? I don't think so. From my own experiences, I don't believe so.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I believe contributes to this important thing is the mentality. I feel since I have arrived in the U.S., I feel this mentality of that people have that they relate their independence to cars. People cannot be just independent by having their own car. I believe they can be independent in so many different ways, but being dependent on your car, being undependent from your car, doesn't relate to any independence at all. It's just people are afraid to take rides from other people and commute together instead of commute on their own car. So
yeah.
Those are my comments.
And they're good ones. Thank you very much, Esam. Steve Henniker?
Well, you know, Esam brings up a really great point about Americans and driving. We make up about 5% of the world's population, but we drive over 40% of the world's miles. And again, that just comes to the way that we have chosen to design our neighborhoods. You know, even in major metropolitan areas, Madison, Milwaukee, Green Bay, where the bus systems are struggling because of lack of state funding, you would think that the transit opportunities are good. They're well used where there are routes, but the problem is, even in our bigger communities, most of us don't live close enough to a bus route to make it a viable alternative for daily transportation.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to change our investment patterns of 10 to 1 highways versus transit and begin to beef up our transit systems.
Our guest is Steve Henniker, Executive Director of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin, and he is the author of an op-ed piece that appeared in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel the other day about the dangers of autobesity, our addiction to automobiles. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890 if you have a question or an experience to share. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. It's now 12 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, October the 9th. After 7, I'll talk with a guest who will examine the reasons why, in Wisconsin, blacks are imprisoned at a higher rate than whites. And what, if anything, the state should do to address this racial disparity. That's coming up after 7 o'clock. We're talking about autobesity this hour. That's a word coined by our guest to talk about our driving addiction or our reliance on automobiles, not just personally, but society in general. Steve Hinneker, executive director of 1,000 Friends of Wisconsin, wrote an op-ed, The Dangers of Autobesity, in which he says, the choice is clear. Feed autobesity with the junk food diet of ever-expanding highways, or start a new, healthy, multimodal diet that recognizes the necessity of driving, but also promotes healthy communities by investing in transit, walking, and bicycling. Do you agree or not? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Julie in Manistee, Michigan is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
I stay in Manistee in Michigan part of the time, and then I'm in Florida the rest of the time. And I've just noticed that, you know, the way our whole system is set up, it's all dependent on the automobile. I don't think it's really our fault, you know, that, you know, we're dependent on automobiles. I mean, here in Michigan, we, you know, this is the auto capital of the country, you know. And, you know, there's got to be some collusion between the oil companies and the car companies and, you know, in resisting even gas mileage to get decent gas mileage. But when I come up here to Michigan, and I'm in northern Michigan, of course, there's no bypass along the roads to even accommodate, you know, bikes. Mm-hmm. And then the same way in Florida. You know, there's no bike paths, there's no bike trails, and, you know, there's a lack of respect for bicyclists. You know, they're spit on, they're shot a bird going down the road on your bike. I mean, it's, and, you know, if you go to a county or city commission and there's talk of bike paths or, you know, bike trails, you know, there's always this resistance, you know, that we can't do it. You know, it's all based on the automobile.
Yeah.
And those are my comments,
well,
and
thank
it's
you
very frustrating.
Yeah, Julie, thanks very much. That bike ride sounds frustrating. Steve Hinneker?
Well, I'm struck by the number of people mm-hmm. that have called in this morning from small towns and rural areas that are frustrated at their dependence on the automobile. And I think it's actually a very encouraging sign that people, even in small communities, are looking for alternatives. You know, if you look back 60, 70 years ago, many of these communities were connected by passenger rail services. Over 20 cities in Wisconsin, much smaller than they are today, obviously, had streetcars. It's actually very encouraging to hear the desire for alternatives to the car, even in smaller communities.
Yeah, thanks very much, Julie. Tom in Burlington is with us. Hi, Tom.
In the 1940s and the 1950s, General Motors bought up all of the public transportation systems in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles. They used to have streetcars, and they were very, very efficient, these electric streetcars. They bought them all up and junked them and replaced them with buses. That's one of the big problems. I'm a bicycle rider, and one of the reasons I discovered Wisconsin Public Radio was I was hit by a car while I was riding my bike, and I broke my neck in two places.
Ooh.
And while I was laying in recovery for about a year, I would listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. And maybe that's a blessing or a curse, but anyway.
Well, it's a blessing to have you listening,
well,
Tom, and I'm
you.
Sorry. I never knew that you went through such a tragic situation.
But anyway, what I wanted to say was a lot of these, the highway construction and the politicians, that's one way the politicians get money for their campaigns as they dip into that big highway trust fund. And another thing I'd just like to point out is our number one industry in Wisconsin right now, and they can't take this to China, is our rustic beauty. People come here, and it brings $12 billion into our state. In Illinois, it brings $25 billion, and they know it, and they work at it. We allow these people to build these highways over the woodlands, the wetlands, and destroy our rustic beauty. And I'd just like to point out that we really have got to protect our rustic beauty and not pave over the highways, because it also affects our wells. The water runs out too quickly, and it doesn't percolate back down into our wells.
Yeah.
And thank you.
Thank you very much, Tom. Good to have you listening. Steve Hinneker, you point out some of those dangers of autobesity in your piece, too.
I do, but what Tom brought up also is a very interesting topic, and I'll just put a quick plug for a book by Stephen Bullitt. It's called Getting There, which does talk about the very real, in fact, conspiracy that was found in federal court to buy up the transit systems across the United States and replace the fixed rail streetcar systems with rubber-tired buses and cars. So it's a very fascinating chapter, dark chapter of American transportation history, but Tom's exactly right. Our transit systems were bought up in the 1940s and 50s as part of a federally found conspiracy to destroy our transit systems.
Yeah. And also the point you made about paving over our beautiful rural landscapes.
Sure, we are paving over paradise. Wisconsin, I moved here in 1978 because I found this to be one of the most spectacular places, beautiful, that I had seen in my many travels. And it's hard to see the destruction of that through shopping malls and, mm-hmm. and highway construction and the like.
Next, we go to Stephen in Fish Creek. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy and morning. Steve. I have so many things to talk about. I lived in China for 5 months last winter, and I experienced a whole different way of living, and then returned to my home in Door County and felt really shocked at habits that I had depended upon, having to use a car to get everywhere. I decided I would ride a bike anywhere under 2 miles. Because I rode a bike everywhere in China, or I walked. When people go to the store there, just for your own benefit, Joy, they wear a little backpack. It's like a basket on their back. And they walk and they carry all their groceries home in their baskets. My grandmother used to have a little rolling cart that she took to the grocery store. It folded flat, and you could carry it on a bus if you wanted to. It opened up, and you could put a whole week's of groceries in it. Trek Bike Company right now has a program on their website encouraging people to ride bikes anywhere under 2 to 3 miles. Schools used to have huge bike racks out in front. They're all gone. Now there's waves of buses that take everybody everywhere. Door County, every year, gets an F in air quality,
mm-hmm.
and they claim we're not responsible. It's coming up the lakeshore. It's this or that. It's the other. It's the neighbor that's making it down in Green Bay or whatever. We don't have any industry. Each year they attract millions of people to come to Door County and drive their cars.
Mm-hmm.
They've got no alternative bus lines. That's enough.
Yeah, well, it's good stuff, Stephen. I've done my share of biking in Door County. It sure is a beautiful place. Steve Hinecker?
Well, it just gets back to the need, I think, to have shopping areas, whether it's a small neighborhood store, cafes, restaurants, and the like, mixed into our neighborhoods instead of segregated in shopping centers and malls that are several miles from our house typically. If we have something nearby, the idea of riding a mile or even less than that to the store becomes very attractive. But when you hit that 4 or 5 mile mark and you've got a lot of groceries, face it, almost all of us are going to say, forget it, I'm going to drive my car.
Mm-hmm. Dan in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, yeah, hi. My wife and I happened to be on a trip out to the Northwest, and we were able to use some of the public transportation systems out there. The most impressive one was in Portland, where they have a modern streetcar system, and they were adding on to that. They were really extending that, and then their light rail went from the airport to this place out in Hillsboro all the way out to the other end where that started the Columbia Gorge and all these other buses that were running and stuff. And we basically rode the public. We parked our car at the hotel and rode the public transportation system. I don't think we used private transportation for anything.
Yeah. Well, the streetcar idea was proposed and dropped in Madison, Steve Hinecker, but you think that kind of thing should be considered?
Oh, I think the streetcar discussion will come back to Madison. I have absolutely no doubt about that at all. The Portland experience is a poster child for what does work, and what's frustrating about the Portland experience is that we keep pointing to that, where if you go to Europe, every community is a Portland as far as transit is concerned. And we need to, as a society, begin to gravitate back towards making the transit investments that make those communities desirable places to live.
Thanks very much, Dan, for the call. So only a minute or so to go, not time for another caller. Lots of interest here in this topic, Steve Hinneker. Not one of our callers lashed out at you as being anti-car, which is something else you brought up in your piece.
Well, I was bracing myself for that because in the article I kind of make the analogy to a doctor who makes the diagnosis and too often we blame the doctor, and I'm not a doctor, obviously, but, you know, bringing up this topic sometimes does bring out just the reaction of, leave me alone. I like to drive. Driving can be fun. It just needs to be put into kind of a context, into proportion, so that we don't overdo it. Yeah. And I think that the calls that I've heard this morning are very encouraging.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Steve Hinneker, Executive Director of 1000 Friends of Wisconsin and author of this op-ed piece that was in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on Sunday about the dangers of auto-obesity. And this encouragement that we go on a diet when it comes to our driving habits. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing the hour and to Karen Prager for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.